Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, we can hit you up in the chat room. We'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. A big week in wrestling, folks. We're going to be talking about the brand new AEW title change. We're going to be talking about some backstage turmoil in WWE that, from what I'm hearing, might be turning ugly. And, of course, we're going to be reviewing SmackDown. Let's start first, of course, with the big news. And that is Christian Cage. On the debut of Rampage Friday night, beats Kenny Omega for the championship, and I would say feelings are mixed. I've been trying to gauge fan reaction to this, and I would say it's 50-50, which I'm very surprised about, because it should be, you know, like 95-5 negative. I have no idea how anyone thinks that this is good for AEW. I don't care if you're the biggest Christian fan in the world. Now, I spoke to some people who said, well, he deserves it, and he's come back a long way, and he's a decent-sized name, and listen, throw all that out the window. You're AEW, and you were trying to make a name for yourself by saying, I want our champion to be someone who can compete at a very high level and perhaps someone who has a big name. You selected Dean Ambrose first, John Moxley. Good choice. Good choice because he was just coming off a big WWE run. Everyone knew who he was. Everyone knew he was a former WWE mainstay. He'd held numerous titles, and the bottom line is, he was a young, fairly young guy. Not so Chris Jericho, who's not that young, but was still performing at a very high level in Japan. He was multi-time champion in WWE. He was a guy who beat, you know, The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin the same night. He's a huge name and someone who was a verifiable, yeah, that's a guy that if he's your champion, you have a top federation. Christian, on the other hand, when last seen in WWE, was trying to beg off a fight with Randy Orton, saying, I'm not really, I can't wrestle, and then just gets beaten up. Looks like a bum. We already know that he's in his late 40s. We already know that he has some medical issues. And we already know that he's not running at a capacity that would make you want to make him your top guy. Now, as far as name recognition is concerned, he has some, but not as the top guy in your federation. I mean, this is sort of the equivalent of saying, well, Dolph Ziggler's our champion. No, Dolph Ziggler's a great wrestler. Dolph Ziggler's still not old by any stretch of the imagination. Dolph Ziggler would actually be a better choice. But you get my connection is that people would say, that's your champion? That's the top guy in your federation. That guy was not, you know, anything in these other federations. See, Moxley was. Jericho was. Christian was not. I'm sorry, Christian was not. Many years ago he was. But for the last 5, 6, 7, nothing, right? So why would you do this? Well, plus it's sort of Kenny Omega's belt to win, and it was Hangman Page's belt to win, and I was very surprised they would do that. I think it's a mistake. And I think maybe it's a feel-good moment. You get that one big, oh, yeah, he did it. You know, the underdog did it. You get that good feel-good moment. But now you're stuck. Now you're stuck with how come Randy Orton and all the WWE guys could wipe the floor with him without even any offense, and your top guys can't beat him? The comparison doesn't look good. Now, I know some people are going to say, well, AEW fans aren't going to compare. Okay, maybe the ones that they're currently aren't going to. But say I'm new to AEW, and I don't even know what it's about. And I pick up a magazine, or I go on the internet, and I say, Christian's their champion? I guess I'll pass. I mean, if Christian's their champion, how good should the Federation be? You see, that's a problem. You want the guy representing that if some casual fan happens to stumble across, your champion list and they say, oh, Chris Jericho's over there? He's the champion? Wow. Oh, John Moxley's over there? He's the champ? Wow. I'm not thinking this is the greatest idea they've ever had. I know they wanted to make this opening show special. Maybe they're going to take it away from them, boom. Maybe it's just a transitional champion, one-night lucky thing, and then boom, Wednesday night he loses, or at the next pay-per-view he loses, or whatever. Maybe they're going to do that. But I really didn't think it was the best idea, Mike, and I said on the show before, if they put this belt on Christian, they're making a huge mistake, and I truly think they are.
Right, and think about it this way. You know, it took them a while to put a belt on Rusev, and Rusev's still a decently young, relatively healthy guy, right? So
yes, and held tight.
If you took you a while, if you took you a while to do it with him, and you really haven't done it with any of the other WWE guys, like I don't know, Jack Swagger or whatever. Why would you do it with a guy who's, we know is in his 40s, in late 40s, and we know has had injury problems? Why?
That's the million-dollar question, Mike. And you brought up Jack Swagger. That's a good point. It would be the equivalent of saying Jack Swagger's your champion, except that Jack's younger and at least has some credibility being a UFC fighter who's undefeated and everything. Christian doesn't have any of this credibility at this point. You're talking about a older, I don't want to say mid-carder, but lower main eventer, a lower main event guy who's racked with injury. And that's your champion? Can't do it. I'm sorry. I like Christian too, but you can't do it. You can't make him your big champ. You want to make him a secondary champion? Okay. You can't make him the top guy. You just can't. And I think it took away a lot of momentum that Kenny Omega had. I know people say he's still got a couple of belts and stuff. Yeah, but now it's the same thing as, you know, Karrion Kross losing to Jeff Hardy before he fights Samoa Joe. I would never have let Kenny Omega lose until he was ready to face Hangman Page, because that's where your story is. And you've sidetracked the story now. This is a mistake. So, Todd, I mean, listen, I'm a Christian fan, but I just can't see him as the top guy.
And you're absolutely right there, like you said, about Christian Cage and everything being a champion. And I don't see him as a top guy either. And maybe he'll probably won't keep the belt that long, maybe until this coming Wednesday night on Dynamite. He probably might lose it, or maybe at the next pay-per-view. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's where that's going. If you're telling me we want another heel to be the champion and we don't want a heel to fight Kenny Omega, okay. That's fine. And I know, because people have said to me, well, if Daniel Bryan had won that, you would not say the same thing. You're right, I wouldn't. Well, why not, Mark? Because he's just as old and he's just as racked with injury. Yeah, but he's a much, 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 much bigger name. And he can still go at a very, 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 very high level. Now, I know that was a good match. But you compare that with a Daniel Bryan match and see what the pacing is. Daniel Bryan can still go to a very high level. Christian's going at about 60%. If. Of what he used to be able to do. And even in his prime, you know, they didn't call him Captain Charisma because he really was the most charismatic guy there. It was a joke that he didn't really have any. And I just, you know, his interviews haven't been so great. His mic work's been so-so. I just don't see this. He's a good name to add to your roster to help the younger talent. He is not a good name to take over and be your champion and keep it away from your homegrown talent. Not Kenny Omega's not exactly homegrown, but he sort of is to the main, you know, what would you call it, the commercial federations. So I think it's a mistake. Now, if they take it off him fairly quickly, fine. I mean, we don't know what's going to be happening in the future. But to put it on him at this point, I just think it was something they promised them, and then they just went through with it. And you just can't make those type of promises. I would not be for Edge winning a belt, and I told everybody that. I said, if Edge wins this away from Roman Reigns, this is a horror show. You can't have Edge just walk out of retirement and beat some guy that nobody else seems to be able to beat. It makes your whole roster look bad. Oh, well, I'm 50, and I'm racked with injury, and the doctor said I'd never wrestle again. I've only wrestled 3 matches in 2 years, but I can beat you. But guys who are here beating it out every week, no, we can't beat you. Not good for the rest of the roster. That's my point. You have a lot of younger talent here, and I know that you need the big names to help promote them. But if you're going to give that belt at this stage to anyone, you know, I guess it should have been Page. I think you could run with Hangman Page. I really do. He does have charisma. He doesn't have a name yet, really. But I think it's one of these guys that he has a name among the more ardent wrestling fans. And I think he's someone that, if you have enough names in your federation, you say, well, I'm not familiar with their champion, but apparently he's pretty good because these other guys that are, I recognize their names and they're not beating them. That's not a bad idea either, Mike. So, I mean, you could have played it either way, but just handing it to him and saying we expect him to keep it for 6 months, I think it's a mistake.
Right. And I mean, look, I mean, this may, like you said, he may be it was a follow through on a promise probably. And but again, who are the heels that you might make him a transitional champion to? I mean, right now, Miro has a belt, you know, so he's not there. Paige is a face, so he's not there. What's his name? MJF isn't ready yet. You know, so he's not there. You're not going to put it on Jericho because Jericho is kind of in that gray area, you know.
Right.
So I'm just going down the roster and see who could be a transitional champion for. I mean, who is it? I mean, maybe just split off from Taz, you know.
Yeah,
they seem to be trying to make him a heel, a face, I mean.
The only other thing I can think, and I know that Punk has denied he's coming to AEW, and then he said he is, and then he said he's not, and then they're playing that game. Maybe he's coming as a heel. If he's coming as a heel, maybe that's a mistake. See, that's another thing. If CM Punk's coming in here as a heel, that's a mistake because the fans are all going to cheer him. Daniel Bryan's certainly not coming in as a heel. So, you're right. I don't know. I don't know. I think Tony Khan looked at this as this is going to be a real feel-good moment, and it's going to show that we can take even the talent that the WWE was totally wasting by not doing anything at all, not even letting them have a match, and make them our champion. but I think it can backfire because it also looks to other wrestling fans like the lowest guys on the totem pole in WWE can be the champions in AEW, so what does that say about their roster? So we'll see. I mean, I was surprised. It's about 50-50 split. Some fans are saying it's great. Oh, I love the. I'm a big Christian fan. I was so happy to see it. Okay, well, we'll see if that translates into more ratings. I had a feeling it's not going to. Not that Kenny Omega was exactly a ratings bonanza or that he's very young, because he's not. But he was one of those guys that has a reputation with the more hardcore wrestling fans of being a top guy, but never really, you know, materialized on the main circuit. Well, now he was. I don't know. Maybe he'll get it right back. But even if that's the plan, if the plan is, oh, he's going to get it right back and then we're going to go to Hangman Page, well, but you let the air out of that sail then. He shouldn't have been beaten until Hangman Page then. So I think he could have got some real heat for Kenny Omega if he beat Christian and kind of crushed that dream. That's just me, but that's what I would have done. Anyway, the show itself, there was nothing wrong with it. It was a good, solid show. Did they do anything that was a little more crossing the line than their Wednesday show? No. No. It was really no different. The matches might have been a little bigger or whatever, but there was no actual difference in their production or they weren't any more hard-edged or anything. I was hoping that that could possibly be a reality, but it doesn't appear like they're going to change that. So, I mean, we'll see. We'll see if this is successful or if it just ends up feeling like a third hour of Dynamite. I was hoping it wouldn't. See, these are the things, I think, that you have to understand that a federation like this, I don't want to say growing pains because they've been around a while now. They shouldn't be having growing pains, but there is a sort of a growing pains feel to this. And that is that they've made promises to people and they want to do certain things that they think is the right move, and they're going to make mistakes. And as much as there's some fans happy about the turnout Friday, I think it was a mistake. There might have been a lot of new viewers Friday. SmackDown viewers who just said, you know what, let me check this AEW out. And they say, Christian's the champion? Well, how good could this Omega guy be? Christian couldn't even wrestle in WWE. He wasn't even allowed in the ring. And he's 47, 48 years old. And even at the top of his game, he wasn't exactly, you know, the guy. So how good could this federation be? How could this Omega guy be? That's what I don't like. Now, if someone were watching SmackDown, never watched AEW before, and said, oh, that's Christian, I recognize him, he used to be pretty good, and Kenny Omega beat him in a convincing fashion, that fan might say, well, wow, okay, well, I don't know this Kenny Omega guy, but he sure as hell took Christian out, and you know, Christian's not a slouch, so maybe I should check this out. You know, have a good match. It can't be a squash match, but have a good match. But, yeah, decisively beat him. So you say, okay, well, their champion is some guy named Omega, and he beat Christian. And I mean, they got Moxley over there, and they got this guy over there and that guy over there, and he's still the champion, so he must be good. That's how you promote. You know, I go see these indie federations a lot, and they'll be like, our champion is Bob Holly, and you're like, well, okay, sure, your champion's Bob Holly. Well, then, you know, I don't know what to say about the rest of your roster. It's not a good idea. They do it just because, well, that's a name, but you got a lot of names in AEW. You got a ton of names now. Hell, Miro would have been better. Because at least people remember him as, this guy was legit, man, at one time. He was beating everybody. He was beating the Big Show. He was beating Mark Henry, both guys who happen to be in AEW right now. So, I mean, he's a legit deal. He would have been better. It's almost the equivalent of like a Bobby Roode going over there. And he's your champion now. Or Bo Dallas going over there, and he's your champion now, and Bo's much younger. But the simple fact was people would say, well, wait a minute, he couldn't beat anybody in WWE, and he's their champion. So, again, it's not for the fans that are currently there. The fans that are currently there are going to be fine with it. But if you want to grow as a federation, you have to have somebody at the top that fans who haven't watched your product yet says, oh, I know that guy. That's your champion? Okay, great. If I didn't know anything about a federation and you told me Christian's the champion, I'd be like, well, then it's a minor league type deal. Because a major league federation's not putting Christian as the champion. That would be my impression. Sorry, but that's what it would be. Anyway, let's get on to the backstage turmoil in the WWE, because while AEW is suffering with their growing pains and deciding who they want to run with and who they don't want to run with, there is some indication that there is some major power struggle going on in the WWE. And from what I'm being told, it come down like this. John Laurinaitis, a couple other guys, Bruce Pritchard, kind of gotten into Vince McMahon's ear and his psyche that you lost the Wednesday Night War because Triple H is incompetent. You've given him how many years at the reins? He's never showed a profit. The ratings have never been super. And he just can't run a federation. And from what I'm hearing, Vince McMahon might be tending to lean that way. Because apparently now the word has come out that Vince McMahon did not notify Triple H nor Shawn Michaels, both guys who have a major, well, Triple H especially, but Michaels to a lesser degree, have major control of NXT. They didn't even inform him they were firing any of these people that they fired. Not one. In other words, Triple H comes into NXT and says, who's fired? My guys on my roster? Who are these people? That they just let these people go? Nobody called me. Nobody told me. Now, that started with the main roster. I could understand maybe he doesn't get notified, but he had told Samoa Joe, I want you to come to NXT before Samoa Joe was fired. Samoa Joe gets fired, and Triple H calls and says, I didn't even know what was going to happen. We were planning on bringing you down to NXT, and I didn't even realize that it was going to happen. So why don't you just come, and I'll sign you to NXT, to which Vince McMahon apparently was not happy and said, this makes me look like an idiot. I fire him, and you hire him and make him a big deal. So apparently that's why they've been dogging a little bit on NXT, making Karrion Kross lose. I told you it wasn't a storyline. Remember when I told all of you guys, there's no storyline of he's going to somehow explain why he lost his first match and lost another match. Then they're not going to have an explanation for that. That's not a storyline. I was right. There's no storyline. That was Vince McMahon sending a clear signal to Triple H, I'll do what I want with your guys. My federation. And now some people are saying that some of the higher-ups, not Vince McMahon himself, I mean, after all, that is his son-in-law, but some of the higher-ups want Triple H out. Not completely out, but they want him to basically absolve his control over NXT to a large degree. In other words, he'd just be in charge of a small amount of whatever. He wouldn't be the main guy there. They want to take full control over it because they've convinced Vince McMahon, if we take full control over NXT, we will bring the ratings up. We will be able to show a profit. Triple H is not being able to do any of these things. He's the wrong guy for the wrong job. And if Vince McMahon, who owns this whole ball of wax, says so, that's the way it's going to go down. Now, this may not set very well. Because I can guarantee you this. There's a lot of Vince McMahon haters out there. But I can guarantee you Triple H is also one of these guys who was like, I'm just going to wait till the old man croaks and then it's mine. He's definitely that guy. I'm sorry, but he is. And if this turns out it's no longer his. And that's a clear message that you are not getting control of the WWE if I go. Someone else is. And that's going to be a hard pill for him to swallow, because that was that's like counting on something your whole life long, right? You're saying, oh, well, I'm in good. I'm a top guy here. I married the boss's daughter. I got my own federation. I'm just biding my time until I'm Vince McMahon. And then all of a sudden, Vince McMahon says, yeah, no. That's not the way it's going to work. So this is like a little bit of a cold water being thrown on your dreams. And I don't know if Triple H is taking it very well. So there's some inner turmoil here. Apparently there's some Triple H supporters in NXT and WWE, and then there's some Triple H detractors, especially in WWE, telling Vince McMahon, and I'm not going to mince words, they're right when they're saying he hasn't turned a profit in this many years. He has not. That is absolutely correct. So from a business standpoint, I've been successful. Has he put on good matches and good cards? Yes. Really good ones. Has it transferred into a profit? No. So if you're running it like a business, you say, how long is a guy a CEO with me losing money before I say I'm going to have to change the CEO? Because whatever this guy's doing, we're not making any money. And I think the straw that broke the camel's back is that a fledgling federation shows up, goes against your guys that you've had established for 3 or 4 years, if not more, and kicks your ass. That did not set well. And that did not bode well for Triple H. Now, in all fairness, before you Triple H supporters come jumping down my throat, in all fairness, Vince McMahon did him no favors. Every time Triple H had a guy that the fans were interested in, that the fans were buying, Vince pulled him. Roman Reigns was down there. Seth Rollins was down there. The Wyatt family was down there. Shinsuke Nakamura, Bobby Roode, Samoa Joe, all these guys, all these guys were down there. And they got plucked. And Vince McMahon was constantly saying, you made this guy into somebody good, let me have him. You go make somebody else into that guy. Oh, this guy's good now? I'm taking him. You go find somebody else. And at some point, Triple H ran out of guys who could be that guy. At some point, Triple H looked around the locker room and said, I don't see the next guy here. And then Vince McMahon says, oh, well, how come? Because you took them all. There's not an endless supply. Think about it. I mean, if right now you said, okay, well, we still have Shinsuke Nakamura down there. We still have Samoa Joe down there. We still have Sami Zayn down there and Cesaro down there. Maybe even Seth Rollins down there. You tell me that's not going to draw? It's going to draw huge. AEW would have stood no chance, zero chance of winning the Wednesday Night Wars if they had a lineup like that. It's just not going to happen. Even low-hanging fruit like a Finn Balor, who you say, well, he's not turning it around. He didn't turn ratings around. But he was arguably their top guy as far as name recognition. They even took him. And now they're going to take Adam Cole. What is it that you expect Triple H to do at that point? Build guys up just to have you take them is not the answer. Because then he can't count on them to draw numbers for you. And then when the ratings come in and you say, well, the ratings are low. Yeah, well, you took all the guys that were drawing the ratings. And by the way, you misused them. So who's really stumbling and bumbling over here? But you see, the WWE's looking at their numbers and they're saying, we may be stumbling and bumbling. But Raw and SmackDown, we're turning a profit. Huge, huge, gigantic, enormous profit. You are in the red. And that's what they see as a business, Mike. They don't see it as wrestling matches. They see it as a business and just money.
Right. And that's maybe that's a problem. Yeah, you maybe you need to see it as a business, some of it as a business. But I always go back to that catchphrase that the Authority had, what is best for business. Now, what was best for business in some of these cases was to leave these guys. Yeah, you can bring some of these guys up, but leave some of these guys down there that were doing well down there. Yeah, bring the Shield up. Yeah, bring the Wyatt family up. But when you were having them go, those two groups going good, and then later on when Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose were going good in their singles careers and the Wyatts were going good and all that stuff, keep them up, keep them strong, and then you wouldn't need to raid NXT.
Well, see, that's the whole thing. Vince McMahon has got to make a decision about what in the hell he wants NXT to be. If NXT is strictly and only your training ground and your breeding ground for new top guys in WWE, don't expect it to turn a profit. How many minor league baseball affiliations turn major profit? Probably not a lot of them. But that's not what they exist for. Okay, fans are coming in, they're buying T-shirts, they want to see the new stars of tomorrow, today, and it's nice, but the ballpark is relatively smaller, they're not drawing 50,000, 40,000 people, they're not selling merchandise like that, they still got salaries to pay and overheads and blah, 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 so they're probably not making money. That's not the design. They don't care if they're making money. Their goal as a minor league baseball team is not to turn a profit, it's to breed tomorrow's stars. So if that's the case, fine, Vince, then don't expect it to turn a profit. It's not a profit-bearing thing. It's more about your future and WWE to be profitable. So you take a little loss on NXT, but you're keeping WWE fresh and exciting. That's the nature of business. If you want to get greedy and say they all got to turn a profit, well, then you're going to have to face the facts that you're going to have guys there that have a following and a name and not worry about if new stars are being built up for the future. You want NXT to have a big name? Send down Sami Zayn. Send down Apollo Crews. Send down a lot of these guys you're really not going to use for anything. Send down Cesaro. Send down Kevin Owens if he's not going to do anything. Send down any of these guys you want. But send down a big name with them. And you'll see a difference. Why do you think you're doing 1.7 and 1.9 million with SmackDown and Raw? Raw is way worse than NXT as far as the show is concerned. The show is a disaster. But people are still watching because there's big names there, names they recognize. So you're getting triple what you're getting in NXT because people look on it and say, I don't know who that guy is and I don't know who that girl is. Send down a few of the women you're not using. See, but it always comes to pass that when you send down a WWE guy, they clean up, or girl, like Charlotte, who beat everybody in sight in the women's division. That was probably a mistake. If you're going to send some people down, you got to say, look, your main job when you go down, you're going to win some matches, but we got some guys here who we think have a big future, and you're going to have to put them over, sell them to the public as being top guys, as good as you are. See, that's the point of you going down there. Otherwise, if you just go down there and you're like, okay, Cesaro's down there and he's cleaned house with everybody, nobody can touch him, then you're like, okay, well, then this roster's no good because Cesaro ain't doing that up here. You can't do that. You have to be able to balance it out. Now, for a while, NXT was doing that. I mean, they had Nakamura, they had Bobby Roode, they had Samoa Joe, they had big names, and they were also building up stars. Not their fault that the Velveteen Dream fell apart. I think he could have been a big star. That's his fault. Vince can't blame that on anybody. But now they're putting all of their eggs in the basket of Adam Cole. And I'm warning Adam Cole fans right now, I don't care what Vince McMahon promises Adam Cole. I don't care if he sits across the table from him. Go talk to Luke Gallows and for a minute, and Carl Anderson about what they were promised. Ultimately, Vince McMahon is going to see Adam Cole in the ring with some of these guys, and he's going to say, ah, he looks like a little kid. Nobody's going to buy it. Just forget it. And that's going to be the end. Adam Cole has a lot more he could do. A lot more he could do in NXT, and he's still popular there, and he still draws there. And I wouldn't be so quick to bring him up. Triple H has no say over that. Now, Vince might use him for a little while, just like he did Aleister Black. Aleister Black was undefeated. People say Aleister Black was treated like shit. Well, he was undefeated for a long time. He even beat Bobby Lashley. But then Vince McMahon was like, eh, and that was it. So I expect Adam Cole is not going to probably find any better fate. So I'm not that anxious to see him come up. I'd rather see him stay exactly where he is. As a matter of fact, if I were Vince McMahon in this situation and I said, well, I do want to use NXT for a breeding ground for future stars, but I also want to draw. I also want to be have good numbers. I want to break that million. Guess what, then? You're going to have to send some names down because you don't have them. And it didn't help you to put their champion on your show and have him humiliated by Jeff Hardy. That did not help. Let's go to the phones. Caller, are you there?
Yep.
Hey, is this Church?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Church, long time no talk. How you been?
Been pretty good. Been pretty good. I figured stop in when you – look at it. Stopping in when we're taking shots at the head people over at WWE. How's it going?
Yeah, well, it's easy to do, isn't it? Shooting fish in a barrel, my friend.
Right?
Yeah. What are we going to do with this mess? I mean, let's get your perspective. You're Vince McMahon. What do you do with NXT? Is it a training ground strictly for your main eventers, or is it a federation you want to draw? Because I don't think you can have both.
If I were Vince, I'd have kept it to the internet. Like, we all know he needs talent. He's looking for his next John Cena.
Right.
But he's not happy with what's coming up because he can't superimpose it onto look at Aleister Black, for example. That's not a kid-friendly gimmick.
Correct.
I mean, you could kids know of him. Kids watch his matches. They are pretty decent matches, but it's not kid friendly. So he can't market it to kids, which in essence, is what Vince wants to do. He wants to have the toy that you can market to kids and he wants to have that's what he wants. It's the marketability aspect. Can I dumb this down so the child can get it and understand who he is and will beg mom and dad to buy his action figure?
You know, I'll tell you something. That's an excellent point, and I'll tell you why. And I know a lot of people are going to say, well, Vince doesn't get anything on the action figures. He just leases it out. Yeah, that's what he does. He licenses it out. But no one's going to want to license it out for big money unless it appeals to children. You're absolutely correct. Vince McMahon is looking for the next family-friendly guy. He thought it was Drew McIntyre. Now he's got Drew McIntyre pointing swords at people. So it's not Drew. He thought it was going to be Roman Reigns, and he finally gave up and said, forget it. We'll just make him a heel. It's not going to work. He doesn't have John Cena. You're right. And he's looking around saying, who's the next guy? this is probably most of his problem with Bray Wyatt. He probably looked at that gimmick and said, it's popular, but it's not, it's getting less and less family friendly as it goes on. They're starting to use pentagrams. They're starting to use references to the occult. They're starting to use demonic and hell and possession. And maybe we better just take a few steps back and look what happened to Bray Wyatt, right? So, yeah, I think you're right. Vince McMahon is looking for that PG, appeals to everybody, John Cena type guy, and he don't have one. He does not have one. And it's not Adam Cole either, by the way. Because as much a comparison as we've made with Adam Cole and Shawn Michaels, Adam Cole is not Shawn Michaels. Let's get that straight right now. Adam Cole is very, very good. He is not Shawn Michaels good. He's not close. Not close. Not because he's not as good an athlete, because he doesn't understand the business as well as Shawn Michaels did. Shawn Michaels approached every single worker he got in the ring with differently and understood what he had to do to get them over as well as what they had to do to get him over. And he played it accordingly. He didn't fight everyone the same. Adam Cole tends to fight everyone the same because that's the way you're being trained now. You're being trained, you're 5'9", you're 5'10", you're 185 pounds. You're fighting another guy who's 5'10", 185 pounds. This is how it goes. Now you're fighting a 6'4" guy who's 260. It's the same. You're fighting a 7-foot-tall guy who's 310. It's the same. It's not the same. It's completely different. It's a world difference. And people coming out of training schools now, they don't get it. But I think he's right, Mike. I think that Vince McMahon is looking for that PG-era superstar.
Well, I mean, think about it this way. They had it. They had that superstar at the beginning of the women's revolution. They had that superstar when Bayley came up. Right?
Yeah. Yep.
She was, I mean, we said it here. She was on her way to becoming the next, the female John Cena. And they ruined it.
They absolutely ruined it. And here's another thing to think about. The demographic of the WWE shows that most of their viewership is over 45 years old. They're not kids. So I don't know why you're trying to do that. I don't know why you're trying to market that. Maybe 10 years ago. But right now, look who's the top woman in the division when she was around. It was Becky Lynch. Was Becky Lynch kid-friendly? She was like a hot-tempered Irish girl who was like a barroom brawler, and, you know, that's who she was. She wasn't kid-friendly. Who's one of your top superstars of all time? Stone Cold Steve Austin. Was he kid-friendly, giving people the middle finger and telling people he was going to stomp a mud hole in their ass while he was drinking beer? Was The Rock kid-friendly when he's talking about eating pie? Was DX-friendly when they were crotch-chopping, telling people to suck it? If you want the hard, cold truth, wrestling is not supposed to be for little kids. And the kids that it is for is sort of those kids, the same kids that are into, like, punk rock or gangster rap or whatever. They're the edgy kids. You know what I mean? You're not supposed to make it for little Sally and little Jimmy who are sitting there saying, gee, Mom, after church, can I watch wrestling? No, it's supposed to be for the kids who are a little edgy. You know what I mean? It's not for the kid who says, what does suck it mean? It's for the kid who says, I know exactly what suck it means. And that's freaking funny. You know what I mean? So it's not for your average 9 and 10 and 11-year-old. It's for those who are a little more, you know, edgy. So you might as well make it that way. And if that's the way you were going to make it, then you had Bray Wyatt, and he was appealing to those kids. Believe me when I tell you. I talked to an awful lot of wrestling fans who are just all about The Fiend. Now he's gone. Congratulations. I don't hear these kids, and listen, I absolutely love Drew McIntyre. I think he is a success story. That son of a bitch busted his ass to reinvent himself, to come back to the WWE, and look at how far he got him. And I still think he's a great wrestler. I think he's one of the best people on the mic they got when they allow him to really just go ahead and say what he wants to say. But I don't hear 15, 16-year-old fans saying, Drew McIntyre, I got to go buy a Drew McIntyre shirt. I got to go buy a Drew McIntyre, like Church was saying. I got to go buy a Drew McIntyre merch. I don't hear that. What I heard was the Fiend, the Fiend, the Fiend, the Fiend. And now you lost that. So, Church, I don't know. I don't know, Church, if they got anybody on the roster currently that can fit that bill.
They had it with Bayley. They could still get it back as soon as she as soon as she has another face turn, which who knows that'll be.
Yep. Yep.
They might have it with Becky Lynch when she comes back, but
yep.
I doubt it at this point.
I mean, they could potentially because she's still going to be popular. But those are two, again, those are the women's wrestlers. And here's what you'll find that's interesting. You can call it misogynistic if you want. I just call it human nature. Most men don't wear women wrestlers' T-shirts. Just a fact. You're appealing to the women and maybe the kids, but you're not appealing so much to the men. I don't see a lot of men in the audience with Sasha Banks T-shirts. I just don't. Becky Lynch crossed the line a little bit. You saw some of that. You're absolutely right with Bayley. Bayley could have been their PG hero. She could have been that girl who says, I'm going to do things right. I'm not going to cheat. I'm not going to do this. She still could be. You could still have her come to Jesus moment and, you know, maybe you can rehab her. But if you don't even see the obvious, which is Sasha Banks is the antithesis of what you want her character, not her person. I'm sure she's a fine person. But her character is the exact opposite of what you want your child to grow up to believe or be. She's materialistic. She's conceited. She's self-centered. She's egotistical, she's backstabbing, arrogant, the whole nine yards. And she thinks the world revolves around, I'm pretty and I got a lot of bling. Bayley was the opposite. Bayley was hard work, dedication, loving what you do, don't take any shortcuts. They had them. They had the two polar opposites that they possibly could, that they should have feuded forever because of their philosophies. And they had to do the stupid switch. And I think that was a mistake. But anyway, NXT now, we'll see what ends up happening. Even in 205 Live, they had some guys wrestling on 205 Live that were like 240. They didn't even hide it. They didn't even say, oh, these guys look bigger than they are. No, they gave their statistics. So 205 Live is done. There's no, I don't even know why you're calling it 205 Live. You got 240-pound guys fighting. So their clear philosophy now is we want bigger guys. Bigger guys are fine. I do agree with that to a certain extent. Not everybody on your roster can be 5'9", 170, because people are just like, well, I can beat these guys up. And they don't look tough or intimidating. You want your wrestlers, most of them, to look tough and intimidating. But you can have some of those guys on the roster, because when you do, like a Daniel Bryan, he's the underdog. And you're like, oh, man, you know, he's pretty much a normal-sized guy. Come on, pull it out. You know, you're rooting for him. He's the underdog. But you can't have a whole federation of them. But on top of that, it doesn't matter whether you're 170 pounds or 370 pounds. If you have no personality, then there's no reason to continue to attempt to push the person. They don't have any personality. One of my favorite wrestlers in the federation is Cesaro. From a technical standpoint, I don't think there is a better wrestler. I'm not even sure AJ Styles is better than him technically, because Cesaro reinvents his moveset every match. He uses some of the same, but he puts it in different order. He keeps you guessing. He does something every match that you're like, whoa. He has everything going for him. He has a zero personality. They tried as hard as they could. He just doesn't have a personality that transfers itself to the audience. He just doesn't. So you can't use him. I'm sorry. You can't. As much as I'd love for him to be used, You can't. He's going to be that guy that if he's the world champion, you're like, yeah, well, nobody's coming to see it. So I don't know, Todd. I mean, do you look around and see anyone in that locker room that could be the next, you know, big guy?
Absolutely not as of right now. Like you said, we haven't seen the next big guy in a long time. We may never get the next big guy, technically.
You're right, unfortunately. It's that sad, but you may be right. Because I don't see him. I look even in NXT, and I'm like, is there a guy down here I think could really break it? I thought Velveteen Dream. Every time I saw the Velveteen Dream, I said, it's just a matter of time. He has the look. He has the physical talent. He has the mic skills. He has it all. He has the charisma. He has all of it. And I said to myself, if he's done well, he's going to be big. He's going to be the next big thing. And then what does the chucklehead do? He starts chatting online with 16-year-olds. And he says he didn't do. But I got a newsflash for you. Police are not dumb. And they can certainly trace your ISP. And they can certainly know who you were talking to at what time through what computer. And if they say he did, then I'm sorry to tell you, he probably did. Now, whether he was three sheets to the wind drunk, whether he was unaware that they were that young, well, that's probably not likely because he asked them where they go to high school. It's just a case of a guy that got a little bit too arrogant and said, I can do this. I'm famous. No, actually, you can't. You're not quite that famous. Now, could he be forgiven? I don't know. Elvis married a 14-year-old girl. And there's still people that got Elvis Presley on their wall, say he's the greatest of all time. Jerry Lee Lewis married his 13-year-old cousin. David Lee Roth of Van Halen said, I slept with 5,000 women and 4,000 of them were under 17. I don't know. He made a mistake. A little bit immature. Maybe, you know, a little bit success went to his head. He's still an immensely talented guy. He's gone. So, I mean, they'd have to hire him back. And I don't think that's happening. But aside from him, everyone is saying Adam Cole, Adam Cole, Adam Cole. I listen to Adam Cole, and I say to myself, I'm watching a guy who grew up listening to Shawn Michaels and is trying really, really, really hard to be Shawn Michaels, and it's not working. It would be like some guy coming into a federation and saying, oh, I'm going to stop a mud hole in your ass and stomp it dry, and I'm going to drink Budweiser. Well, that's Steve Austin. And you're not Steve Austin. Yeah, but Steve Austin's gone now, so I'll just take his spot. No. So that's what I see when I see Adam Cole. I don't see fresh and new and different. I see cosplay Shawn Michaels, and I just don't think that's going to work for him. It's a been there, done that sort of thing. Let's talk a little bit about SmackDown, because the John Cena opening with Roman Reigns caused a furor. And this goes to show you how boring WWE has been. Because everyone was saying that was one of the greatest promos ever between Roman Reigns and John Cena. It was so good and it felt so real. And I'm saying to myself, I was sitting on my couch saying, well, this sucks. This is awful. Why was it awful? I'll tell you why it was awful. Number one, John Cena didn't say a thing that was true. See, the great thing about John Cena is he used to say stuff that was true. Remember when he was in the feud with The Rock and he said, well, you left just to go to Hollywood. You just think this is a pit stop for you to promote your films and do X, Y, and Z and whatever. And what could The Rock say? It was true. He used to be able to cut right to the bone and get to the heart of what is true. And that's what made John Cena promo so good, is he would just eviscerate you. Remember when he called Baron Corbin skinny fat? And you're like, that's kind of true. With Roman Reigns, he says, well, they tried so hard to push you in different characters and none of it ever worked. What do you mean none of it ever worked? The man beat The Undertaker. The man was the champion. He's in a character now that's easily the best thing in WWE. So that's not true. So chalk up one thing that's not true. Then he says, and look, you sent Dean Ambrose packing. He didn't send Dean Ambrose packing. Dean Ambrose was highly successful after he left the Shield. It had nothing to do with Roman Reigns, so that was just dropping a name just to drop a name. People were like, oh, he mentioned Dean Ambrose. Wasn't that great? No, it was dumb. Now, if he had said, Dean Ambrose left just to get away from you, that would have been better than you drove him out of here. How did Roman Reigns drive him out of here? That's not true. It's not even close to true. Then he says, and you ask Paul Heyman about me, that I never quit, and, you know, look what happened with basically he was alluding to Brock Lesnar. What happened with Brock Lesnar? You got your ass kicked for like 12 straight minutes. You hardly gotten a punch. Then he says, and you ruined Seth Rollins. How do you ruin Seth Rollins? Nothing John Cena said was true. None of it. It was just word gibberish. Let me drop some names to sound hip. And then he does the little CM Punk thing. Maybe I'll jump the barricade and blow your kiss on the way out like CM Punk did to Vince McMahon. What's that got to do with Roman Reigns? None of this was any good. I mean, John Cena could have cut Roman Reigns down a number of ways, saying, the first thing is this. If you think you're the head of the table, the only reason you got to the head of the table is because you used your family name to do it. Okay? I don't have a lineage in WWE. I earned my way to the top. You were the chosen one from the very beginning because of who your family was. So you already got the heads up. And you still aren't a patch on my ass. You had every advantage in the world because of your family name. I had zero. And I'm about to be a 17-time world champion, and you're lucky if you'll ever main event a WrestleMania again. That would have been good. Saying you sent Dean Ambrose packing, not true. Ruined Seth Rollins? Not true. Aren't going over with the fans? Not true. Telling Paul Heyman, you know what I did to Brock Lesnar? Not true. None of it was true. And Roman Reigns is just laughing at it. He's not even taking it like, he's just smiling going, yeah, okay. He didn't even act like, okay, this guy's really bothering me. And he gets in the best line when he says, well, obviously you weren't enough for Nikki Bella. But then John Cena doesn't act like it's bothering him because, of course, he can't because his new wife will get mad. But the bottom line is he should have acted like that bothered him to a certain extent. If you wanted to get this feud to be really interesting, you don't do it on your gimmicks aren't as good as mine. That's a dumb way to start a feud. You do it on this is how far the WWE has fallen. When I was here, the ratings were through the roof. The merchandise selling was through the roof. WrestleManias were a big deal. You know what you are? You are lucky to be here at this time because if you were in this federation when I was coming up, you'd be sitting back at catering. Then Roman Reigns could have said, yeah, you did so well. You just basically, you lied. Remember when you told my cousin The Rock that he left for Hollywood and he abandoned the WWE? What the hell did you do? Oh, you come back here once in a while. Do you think any of these fans think you come back here because you love wrestling or they think you come back here to promote your movie? Isn't it funny? Your movie's always coming out when you're here, John. How come you're not here when a movie's not coming out? Because you don't care. Then you come out here and throw your towel at somebody and expect them to say, oh, John Cena's back and he loves us. You don't love anybody except yourself. Then at least you would have said, okay, we're into it now. Now we're getting personal. We're getting into this. No, they just throwed out nonsense, Mike, and it didn't make any sense. And I just think it was a terrible John Cena promo.
It was on John Cena's part, it was terrible. It was very bad on his part, and you're right. Where was his cutdowns? The best cutdown of the thing came from Roman Reigns when he was talking about John Cena's relationship with Nikki Bella. You know, the best cutdown in the whole thing, and it came from Roman Reigns.
That's right. Why didn't he say the only time you've had a modicum of success is when they hooked you up with that fat little walrus back there who ran a federation into the ground? when he was given a chance. That would have got the oohs and ahs going. How do you say you ruin Seth Rollins when Seth Rollins is on the goddamn show in one of the big events facing Edge? Seth Rollins has got to be backstage saying, hey, gee, thanks for the favor. What are you saying? I suck now. I'm terrible. I'm garbage. God, that was awful. Church, I don't think this was one of John Cena's best promos, despite what the internet has to say.
This is what happens when you give John Cena a script instead of letting him cut his usual, and I hate to use a CM Punk word here, hype bomb.
Right.
Off the dome. Because it's clear he doesn't watch the current product.
You're absolutely right. I was just going to say that. It's clear he's not watching. That's exactly right. There's no way. This man, like, was brushed up on the airplane, like, the last show or something, and said, what's going on? That's exactly right, Todd. This man is not watching the product.
Absolutely right there, like you said. What Church said before, like with John Cena, he probably don't watch the product at all. He just, like, whatever, just do whatever he wants in the promo.
No, Church hit it on the head. There's no way John Cena's watching wrestling, because he actually thinks that somehow Roman Reigns drove out Dean Ambrose is not true. Somebody just told him, oh, mention Dean Ambrose, and it's not mentioning John Moxley exactly. We still own Dean Ambrose, so you can mention that, and that'll be cool. And then, you know, he don't even know Seth Rollins, I guess, is in a main event, so he says, oh, Seth Rollins is ruined because of you. Ruined? I would argue Seth Rollins went on to bigger success than Roman Reigns for a while after the Shield broke up. So that doesn't make any sense. None of it made any sense. But Roman's reactions didn't make any sense either, because Roman just laughing at him. Like, none of this bothers me. Well, if none of it bothers you, then you're not mad. You know, we want to see a mad Roman Reigns. He had to cut to Roman the bone. That's what he had to do. He had to tell Roman Reigns, you're not the head of any table. When your family was in this business, they were in a business at a time when there was top level going on. They were the heads of their table. You're a product of that. You're the guy sitting in the high chair getting spoon-fed, because that's exactly what happened to you. You're a spoon-fed little infant baby sitting in a high chair getting spoon-fed by your relatives who paved the way for you. Nobody paved the way for me. Then you could add Roman, get really upset and say, you keep my family out of your mouth. Because at least I don't have a father that goes on every talk show to put $50 in his goddamn pocket talking about what's wrong with the business when he ain't never been in it. You want to see fireworks start to fly? That would have been fireworks start to fly, my friends. Because then you would have been bringing family into it. And people would have said, well, that's a little bit true. John Cena's father does do that a little bit, and that's a little bit true what John Cena said about him getting spoon-fed this business by his family. This is getting ugly. But if you just make up lies, you know, then it doesn't make any sense. That would be like Goldberg coming out and saying, hey, Bobby Lashley, how good of a champion could you be? You lost to Aleister Black a while back. You lost to Ricochet once. Where are these guys? You think you could beat me if you can't beat Aleister Black and Ricochet? Well, that's not a good thing to say for a feud. That's actually killing your feud. You don't want to run down the guy that you're fighting, because if you're running down the guy that you're fighting, then when you beat him, it's like, well, of course I beat him. He's nobody. See, that's the mistake a lot of wrestlers make. You should build up the guy you're fighting. You know, he should have came out there and said, well, well, well. You finally made it. You had so much ambition to be the top guy, and you couldn't be. Because the fans just didn't like you enough, Roman. The fans saw through you. They saw the guy you really are. This is the guy you really are. Congratulations. Now they see you. But you had to hook up with that little walrus behind you who couldn't run a federation and ran his own into the ground. You have to take every shortcut in the world to win. But congratulations, you're here. You're the top dog. You're right. And, yeah, since I've been here last, you're much better. You're a much better competitor than you've ever been before. And I know who I'm stepping in the ring with. I'm not an idiot. I know you're a top-level guy. But I also know this about you. I know your weakness. And your weakness is you're arrogant. And you think I'm just some guy who comes in here once in a while, and I've lost all my skill, and I'm going to be a guy who hasn't had a match in a while, and I'm going to be easy pickings because I'm going to have ring rust and whatever. You keep thinking that. Then at least it would have been, okay, well, this could get good. But when you run down a guy, if I say, well, this guy's nobody, anybody could beat him, you're just lucky, you're a lucky champion, you're nothing, you're nothing, you're nothing, and then I lose to you, well, then I guess I'm really nothing. And even if I beat you, then what do I say? Will I be the guy who was nothing? You know what I mean, Mike? I hate it when they start running down their opponents, because then what did you win if you beat them?
Right, and think about this. You mentioned being spoon-fed. You know, if he would use that line about being spoon-fed, then Roman Reigns could have come back and said, I don't look at it as being spoon-fed. You know, do you have any concept of what legacy means?
Right.
You know, it's not being spoon-fed when you're a part of something bigger than yourself, which would have been true, you know?
Well, you could have gone one step farther if you really wanted to get ugly, and you could have said, well, what were you, John? You're being spoon-fed for Hollywood. All of these WWE matches you had while you were calling up agents on the phone saying, can I get a part in your movie? That's being spoon-fed. Vince McMahon was spoon-feeding you to Hollywood, and boy, you ate it up. And you ran there as quick as you could. You really think you're an actor? Is that what you set out to be, John? You want to be an actor? The only reason you're an actor is because you became a pro wrestler. And they spoon-fed you to Hollywood, John. And you ran. Because in Hollywood, nobody really beats you up like I'm going to do at SummerSlam. So if you have a movie, John, that you're about to do, I suggest you take your name off the contract. Because after SummerSlam, you're not going to be able to do the movie. And all those Hollywood agents who were saying, John, don't get hurt. John, don't do this. John, don't do that. They're going to be pissed at you. That would have been cool, because then you would have said, oh, shit, wow, that's true. Those guys are saying that. But the WWE doesn't make any sense. They never make any sense. Let's go through what doesn't make sense. You literally have a contract signing for the women's belt between Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair. And Sasha Banks says, I need witnesses. And out comes Zelina Vega and Carmella. They were fighting her last week. They were all fighting for a title shot. How come they didn't just knock down Zelina Vega and put their name on the contract like John Cena did? Why wouldn't they do that? Why are they on her side? All they had to do was dump her out of the ring, and one of them girls put their name on the contract, and I guess they're fighting her at SummerSlam, right? It doesn't make any sense. Why are they friends now? Why are they a unit? Why are they doing her bidding? Why is she their boss? They were fighting with her last week. It's ridiculous. It's getting on my nerves. Because any idiot would know better than this. My God, I've a 7-year-old writing a play for his kindergarten class would say that doesn't make any sense. But nothing makes sense. How come there's a heavy metal guitar player coming out with Shinsuke friggin' Nakamura? Oh, because they always called him, he's like the rock star of the WWE. Well, was there anything that indicated he was into heavy metal? Who is this guy, Rick Boons? How come he's hanging around him? What's their relationship? How come we don't know? There's no chemistry at all. None. Zero. It's just like some guy starts stalking him one night with a guitar. We don't see them backstage talking. We don't see any kind of interaction. We don't have an explanation of why. It's just no. Shinsuke Nakamura is now with a heavy metal dude, and that's the way it is, and that's it. What? And now you've made him the champion because obviously Apollo Crews didn't work because he has a zero personality. The fake accent didn't work. So now Nakamura is the champion. Okay, I like Nakamura as being the champion, but the bottom line is we don't have any kind of feel for why he's with this Rick Boogs guy or whatever his name is. And now what's next for Apollo Crews? I mean, if anybody ever needed the belt, it's Crews, because at least then with the belt, he's relevant. He's not completely irrelevant now. He's completely irrelevant. It would not surprise me if he's on the release list, because I have no idea what you'll do with him from this point forward. None. Without a belt, he is not an entity. So I don't know, Church. I mean, one day a heavy metal dude just starts walking out behind Shinsuke Nakamura, and we're supposed to accept, well, they're friends or they're I don't know what the hell it's supposed to be.
They could easily explain it away like this. One day, Shinsuke asked the bosses, hey, can I get a heavy metal guitar guy to play me into the venue? And we're like, okay.
Couldn't they at least have established a relationship first? Couldn't they have at least had this guy show up and introduce himself or something, and then him and Shinsuke Nakamura kind of form an alliance of some kind, and then he starts walking out with him? It was just like done. You know what it would be like? It would be like Sasha Banks all of a sudden, Carmella and company, or what's her name, Selena Vega, or Sasha Banks' lackeys. Why? See, the WWE does this all the time. They just say, well, it's because we say so. And by the way, WWE, after weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks of interesting storyline between Roman Reigns and Jimmy and Jey Uso, you don't even put them together anymore. We don't see them backstage together. We don't see any tension in a relationship. We don't see them coming out with Roman. We don't see any of this. You've dropped it. You've just dropped all of this, and this was your most interesting storyline. And now you got Jimmy Uso basically saying, yeah, we're going to kill Rey Mysterio and his son, and I'm evil now. Why? No. You dropped the ball. The whole idea was that Jimmy was trying to tell Jay, this ain't the right way. I love my cousin, and I'm glad he's successful, but we ain't going this direction. There still should be that tension. There still should be some tension between Jay saying, I don't know who's right. I love my brother, and I understand what he's saying, and I get it. But my cousin is very successful. He's trying to do what's best for the family, and I don't know. I don't know who to go. Why do I have to choose? See, that was his dilemma, is why do I have to choose? You're both my family. I love both of you. Why do I have to choose? Why is both of you trying to make me choose? That's an interesting storyline. And you've dropped it. And now supposedly you said, well, we sent Naomi over to SmackDown. Where is she? This is the perfect time for her to come in and tell Jimmy this isn't the way to do things. Or if Jimmy was still saying this isn't the way to do things, this is the perfect time to have Naomi side a little bit with Roman Reigns and say my career wasn't going anywhere. And I'm more than happy to follow his game plan. And you should be too, because then you got tension between husband and wife. There's so much you could do here, and you're doing none of it. You're doing none of it. You know what this is like? This is like watching Die Hard, and you got two scenes, the beginning and the end. And you're like, okay, well, all that shit that happened in the middle that made the end so satisfying is now irrelevant because you don't even see it. That's what WWE does on a regular basis, Todd, and that's why the stories all suck.
Well, you're absolutely right. Like you said, the other night, that match with Mysterio and Dominic wrestled the Dirty Dogs, it looks like Jimmy Uso not saying much on the Titantron more than Jay was. It looks like Jimmy trying to didn't look like he didn't want to be the heel in it.
I think the opposite. Jimmy was making faces and acting like he's a badass, and I'm like, wait a minute, Jimmy's supposed to be the guy who's kind of saying, I don't want to follow Roman. So I don't know, Mike. It just seems like the thing changes on such a weird basis that you can't follow it.
I mean, I don't want to say it right now, but it's hanging right there that, I mean, the way they're going right now, if everything's being dropped, it's just another one of these things that has let down a blind alley. And I mean, it'd be very easy for them to pick it up again. Very easy. And like you said, this whole situation still has branches on the tree. It really does, especially if you keep that little weasel Paul Heyman around, with all due respect to Bobby the Brain Heenan, you know. But if you keep him around and have him start talking around with Naomi, you know, and have Naomi start winning.
The idea behind why this story was so good and it was actually compelling to watch is because it felt real. I give full credit to Jey Uso, who did a fantastic job of acting, especially, and Roman Reigns, who did a really good job of playing this character who's very manipulative and using family to kind of further his career and do all that kind of stuff. And then when Jimmy came back, he was very good, being the brother saying, you're being used. You're being used by a guy who don't give one damn about family. He gives a damn about himself. And that was totally changed around in like 3 weeks. It's, no, I'm all for Roman. There still should be that underlying. There still should be Jimmy saying, look, Jey, I'm going along with this because you're right. You shouldn't have to choose. So I'm going along with this, but I don't like it. And truth be known, I don't trust Roman. Now, we'll go along with it. Maybe you're right. But if the day comes, then you remember who told you so. Then at least we'd have, okay, there's still that tension there. Roman is still saying, you know, Jimmy don't get it. He may be falling into line, but he still doesn't get it. And it's irritating because I know what he's trying to do. He's trying to drive a wedge between you and me. And if he keeps doing that, there's going to be trouble. And then if he recruited Naomi, boy, would Jimmy be mad, right? Because that would be like Roman saying, oh, you tried to drive a wedge between me and your brother? I'll try to drive a wedge between you and your wife. That's pretty evil. Church, that would have been a compelling storyline, but the WWE just don't see these things.
That would have been an Attitude Era level storyline, bro. Like, they want those Attitude Era numbers. That would have been the one to go with.
Yep. Yep, and they got all the people there, and I'm not doing anything with them. It's so frustrating. It's so frustrating. It's like watching someone who has all of the tools to do a job, and they can't do it. It would be like watching a carpenter, you know, pull up with the best set of tools you ever saw, and they can't even pound a nail into a friggin' board. And you're just sitting there going, what the frig? It's very frustrating. That's why it's very hard for me to watch. It might be harder for me to watch than the average fan, because I always look at it from a writer's point of view and say, you have all this. Why? Why can't you come up with things like this? Do you know how horrible that would be? Can you imagine how much heat Roman Reigns could get if Naomi told her husband off and said, listen, you got no room to talk here. You want to talk about letting me down? You want to talk letting the family down? How many times you've been arrested for drunk driving? How many times you let the family down? You got a big problem, okay? I had a problem with my career, and guess who helped me? Not you. While you're getting your mugshot taken, no, not you. Roman helped me. I think it's about time for you to fall in line and realize that this man is looking out for us. And then if Jimmy's looking like, what the frig? You know, and Roman's just smiling at him like, hey, bro, you want to play that game? I can play that game better. That's tension. That's tension. And then, of course, as a good writer, you say eventually Naomi's going to realize Roman's a snake in the grass, and he's not out for her husband's best intentions. And that's when the real feud's going to start. But for now, we're just going to play it this way with Jimmy saying, I guess I got to fall into line. My brother, my wife, he'll take everything away from me. I won't even have a family if I don't follow what he follows. And I don't want to follow what he follows, but what choice do I have? That'd be pretty cool. I mean, that's a compelling storyline, Mike, and one that I think would drive some ratings.
It really is. I mean, and look, this whole thing, I mean, you've said it before. You're always looking at storylines and saying, okay, storyline 101, writing 101, right?
Yep.
And this is kind of writing 101 for wrestling writing, right?
It is. Yeah. So you always take a negative and turn it into a positive. So Jimmy Uso embarrassed the company by having some DWI charges. Admit them. Admit them on television. Have Naomi take him to task and say, that's not what I call looking out for my best interest or the interest of our family. While my career was going downhill, you're busy getting drunk driving charges. That helped. I came over here to SmackDown because Roman asked for me personally, and it's rejuvenating my career. And you should be thanking him. Instead of telling people you don't trust them, you should be thanking them rather than trying to drive a wedge between your brother and him. Because then fans are caught with this thing saying Naomi is wrong, but she thinks she's right. She's not a bad person. She's bluffed. And it's aggravating because Jimmy is right, but she don't see it. And Todd, that's the way fans get into a storyline, because they wait for that moment when you say she's going to see it.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, they're going to wait till a big moment comes, a big payoff in this storyline.
Right, and that's exactly what it is, Church. It's you wait for that big payoff moment saying Naomi is right as far as she thinks, but she's wrong because Roman's using her and she doesn't see it. There's an awful lot of stuff there. That it's an intelligent storyline that fans can relate to characters on a different level.
This is what we would call kayfabe, for those of you who don't know what that word means.
Right.
It's go ahead.
Go ahead.
It's the thing that Vince is afraid of, because if the kayfabe becomes too real, then he has to answer to all of the people, like all of the corporate sponsorships. Yeah.
But he's letting John Cena come in here and saying you tried different gimmicks and they didn't work. He's letting John Cena break kayfabe. So why the hell not? You see, it blurs the line between what's real and what isn't, because you say Naomi really is his wife. Roman really is, you know, his cousin. There is tension in this family. How far are they going to take this? You know, how far is this going to go before it shatters this entire family? And then there's many branches on that tree, Mike. I mean, you can literally have Jimmy Uso say, my wife convinced me. I'm all for Roman. What he did for my wife and got her career rejuvenated, I could never thank him enough. He's right. I was wrong from the very beginning. I got a lot of making up to do to my wife. And then have it be Jay who starts to realize and say, you know what, you were right, bro, from the very beginning. And him say, no, you were right. And him say, no, man, I'm telling you, I heard this, I heard that. There's so much you could do with that storyline, Mike. You could stretch it out way past WrestleMania if you wanted to.
I mean, I'm thinking about something like, okay, she comes in and says, what have you done with my family? And then all of a sudden, she's starting to win and climb up the charts. And all of a sudden, you know, she wins some more. And then she's right back in the hunt for the SmackDown Women's Championship and actually does win it. And she says, well, where was my career before, and now where is it now? You know?
Right. Exactly. So much you could do with that storyline. But let's go back to SmackDown. What storylines do we have? So the Street Profits come out, and they beat Otis and Gable. why. I don't know why. I guess because we have heels as champions, so you have to have the faces win so they look like the number one contenders. What exactly are we doing with Otis if he's a monster badass heel? Then just have Gable manage him. And let's see some solo matches where he can actually win. If you've got something like him wanting to turn on Gable, that's a lousy angle, and I'll tell you why. Because Gable is not as big as his leg. So, of course, it looks like Otis is going to win. So if Otis says, oh, you used me, and I'm going back to being the old Otis, and we're going to have a big feud, well, that's not a good feud. Because Gable's getting pinned left and right, and it looks like Otis could crush him. I'll tell you what you need to do. Here's another one. If you want to do fantasy booking, let's do this. Mandy Rose is doing nothing. Is she even in the Federation anymore? Did she get released? I don't remember. Anyway, she shouldn't have been. If she is, send her over to SmackDown again to say to Otis, what happened to you? You were like the sweetest guy I ever met. And now you're this. And have Chad Gable say, oh, no, she's poisoning your mind. You're winning, aren't you? You're doing all the right things. Then you have some tension again. Who's Otis going to put his faith in? And eventually you take him back to being the old lovable Otis so he can make a run. You have to have storylines that people say, I'm interested. There's tension. There's real drama. It's like watching a soap opera and nobody is cheating on anybody. Nobody is backstabbing anybody. Nobody is a spy for a foreign country. Nobody is cooking up a Frankenstein in their basement. It's just everybody's just living life. I'm going to the store. I'm coming back from the store. I'm cooking dinner. I'm eating dinner. I'm watching TV. I'm watching TV. You're not going to watch that. You're not going to watch that because you're going to say, well, that's what I do. That's just normal life. No, there's always got to be that drama, that tension. Who's got the rare disease, and can they cure it in time? Who's getting married, but they're cheating on their bride-to-be? Who's a Russian spy? Who's a alien from another planet? There's always something in a soap opera that makes you say, oh, my God, I have to see what happens next. There's nothing on Raw or SmackDown that makes you think, I have to see what happens next. Bill Goldberg stumbling out? Making some kind of ridiculous comment about, I'm always going to be Bill Goldberg no matter how old I am. Well, yeah, okay, well, what's that mean? You're always going to suck? Bobby Lashley not even knowing what to say because he's like, this is the worst promo in history. I thought I was bad. This guy's really bad. Roman Reigns laughing at John Cena because he's like, well, none of this is true, so I don't know why it would hurt me. I just don't see any tension. I don't see drama. I don't see things that you're like, wow. Remember when the WWE, every week you do something that just sent shivers up your spine, man, and you were like, whoa, this is going to get deep. Nah, there's nothing now. There's nothing. When the best thing on Raw is Tozawa dressing up as a delivery guy, And Reggie doing flips, that's pretty sad. And now they come out with this big thing. This sword was named after my mother who died, and she was told to abort me, but she wouldn't. Oh, you just know somebody's going to break the sword. You just know somebody's going to do that. But because he didn't say that to begin with, we don't buy it anymore, see? Sheamus handed him that sword. Sheamus gave him that sword. If you were going to do that, you'd have to say from the very beginning, do you remember what this represented? And stuff. Now to say it, it's almost like Lily the Doll. They did the same thing with Lily the Doll. All the time that Alexa Bliss was with Bray Wyatt, she never mentioned having a doll when she was a little kid and being all spooky. She was the exact opposite. She was like a little princess, right? She was like a little miniature version of Sasha Banks running around saying, I'm pretty and I'm a princess. And now all of a sudden it's, oh, I was always a gothic, dark, evil girl. No, you weren't. Why didn't you mention that to begin with? So that's why we don't buy it. That's the real problem, Church, is that they don't think of these things ahead of time. So then when they do think of them, you're like, well, I don't buy it because you didn't say that to begin with.
It begs the question. It really does beg the question, why even add that alteration to begin with?
There's no reason.
We want to suspend our disbelief enough to believe the fight that's happening in front of us. You can easily boil it down to this person is mad about this about what this person either said and or did. That simple.
I agree with you 100%. And if I was ever going to bring Jinder Mahal back to start a feud with Drew McIntyre, it would have been first a friendly one. It would have been Jinder Mahal saying, you know how far we came, you and I? We were in an air guitar band being laughed at by the audience. And I became world champion. And then you did. Because at the end of the day, they couldn't stop us from being as good as we are. And I'm so happy that you won, and I'm sure you're happy that I won, and it's all good. And then when Drew McIntyre starts getting more of the cheers from the crowd and more of whatever, we could see Jinder Mahal starting to get jealous and saying, I don't think you're as good a friend to me as I thought you were because you seem to be trying to hog the spotlight for me, and you don't seem to have the same respect for my championship as I did for yours. And we're saying, no, Jinder's wrong. Jinder's just mad because he's not successful now. And eventually McIntyre can say that, saying, it just sounds like you're jealous. I can't help it that you're not rising to that same success now. You were there before. You can get there again. But don't be mad at me because I'm there. And then we could have had the big falling out where he introduces these two big animals to beat Drew McIntyre senseless. Because then it would have made sense. And you say, well, his jealousy reached such a point that he was losing matches on Raw, and he knew he wasn't going to work his way up the ladder. Now he's brought these two monsters in, and his goal is to destroy Drew McIntyre because if I can't be it, you can't be it. If I can't be successful, I'm making sure you're not. That would be great. That would be a great setup, Mike, and it would be something that we could believe in.
And frankly, I've mentioned this before. Oh, a half a year ago, maybe a little bit more, these two guys and Heath Slater did a table for three, all right? And they flat out said, we'd like to get back together as a team and do some stuff with each other as a team. Now, let's fast forward to now. And, yeah, he's gone, but it'd be very easy for them to bring Heath Slater back and have him be the instigator of a very contentious feud between, you know, Drew and Jinder Mahal, you know?
Even if you didn't want to do that, you could have brought him, you could bring him back as a guy who says, look, I was the leader of that thing. And you guys got to settle this like brothers. So, you know, we'll do a throw in the towel match. I'll have both towels. You trust me. Jinder trusts me. I was the guy who was leading this little unit we had. So I'll make the decision when somebody can't go anymore. And then if he's a rat bastard and he throws it in on Drew McIntyre when Drew's not even hurt, then you're like, well, that little rat bastard. And if he's not, if he's the guy who says, well, Jinder is really hurt and Jinder won't give up, so I have to throw it in, then Jinder could be mad and he could say, look, you weren't winning, Jinder. I didn't want to see you hurt anymore. Drew could be begging with him, please throw in the towel. I don't want to do this. Throw it in. And eventually Slater does, and then Jinder's mad and says, oh, you ripped me off. No, you didn't rip him off. You saved him. But at the end of the day, there's plenty of branches on the tree. You either start another feud with Slater and him, or Slater and Drew, or you get them back together because the other guys that are with them find a different leader, and now you got three guys against three guys. There's so much you can do. But they don't want to. They don't have a creative bone in their bodies, none of these people. They just come up with dumb things like, I will destroy Jinder Mahal's motorcycle, like he doesn't have insurance. They just come up with dumb things like Baron Corbin is now poor, like he's not being paid to wrestle. This is the dumbest angle in the world. I need $1,000. Well, how much are they paying you to be on SmackDown every week? Like, fans don't say, well, you could just go to an autograph signing and make $5,000. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And if you were going to do this angle, then you got to do it and turn them face. Because nobody wants to see a guy picked on when they're down, even Baron Corbin. So this is the guy that you have to turn eventually face. Now I know what they're saving this for, King of the Ring tournament, which he's probably going to win again. But the bottom line is, he's not a sympathetic character. At some point, and then he asks every fan in the audience for $1,000, which is, it's funny, but it's not helping. What would help is if fans genuinely felt sorry for Baron Corbin. But then you have to say, my contract expired with WWE. I haven't won any matches. They're not going to renew my contract. I don't have another way of making a living. Then if you had some rat bastard heel say, well, if you basically lick my boots by doing all my dirty work, I'll throw you a few dollars. And Baron Corbin has to do it because what else can he do? It's the only way to stay relevant. And eventually, of course, Baron Corbin snaps and says, I'd rather be poor than to put up with your bullshit. And then you've got yourself a really good feud. And Baron Corbin's a face. You have to think outside the box sometimes, Mike. I mean, it just, I don't know. There's just no creativity left in the WWE.
Well, Lord, think about it. That's exactly what they did. Almost exactly what they did with Virgil. You know, all those times Virgil had to clean his shoes and drive him and do all this, Ted DiBiase and do all this other stuff. All these menial, low-level kind of jobs for things for Ted DiBiase, we were all just waiting. We knew that he wasn't going to beat him. That's not what we were waiting for at the time. What we were waiting for was him, Virgil, to say, "I've had enough of this." You know.
Right. Right. And exactly. And so you just play that angle again with Baron Corbin, and you play it for all it's worth. You get the fans on his side 100%, and eventually people are going to sympathize with him. And when he snaps on whoever it happens to be, I mean, take your pick. It's also another way to build up a good heel. So take your pick on a guy. Maybe it's Seth Rollins. Maybe it's, whoever it happens to be, it doesn't matter. MVP, it doesn't matter. Put them on whatever program. Make sure it's someone the fans hate. Make sure it's someone that the fans say, well, I'd root for Baron Corbin over that bastard anyway. I hate that guy. And make it really not good. And then they'd root for Baron Corbin. Of course they would. And you'd have a good storyline. I mean, I want to meet the writer who just says, I got a good idea. How about Shinsuke Nakamura comes out to a heavy metal guitar player who he doesn't even know, and we won't even give any idea about how he knows him or why he knows him, and they won't even talk to each other, really. And that's it. Oh, brilliant. I love it. No, that's dumb. I got an idea. How about we have John Cena sign the contract instead of Finn Balor? Like, that would hold up. Oh, that's a brilliant idea. No, that's a dumb idea. That's a dumb idea. What would have been a brilliant idea is for Roman Reigns and his crew to attack Finn Balor and put him out for a month and say, oh, I guess there's not going to be a match after all, and then have Adam Pearce or whatever the hell, Sony DeVille, say, okay, well, that's the way you want to play the game. You are fighting John Cena. Then at least it would have made sense. It doesn't make any sense. This wouldn't hold up. How come Roman Reigns didn't say that? How come Roman Reigns didn't say, listen, you're such a loser, you had to jump somebody else's contract. Finn Balor had a legal right to face me for this belt at SummerSlam, and you couldn't take it. Your ego wouldn't take it. So what did you do? You jumped the line like the creep that you are, and you put your name on a contract that where it didn't belong, and now you expect me to honor it? How come he didn't say that? And where's Finn Balor? I know he said he's not happy with John Cena, but unless he turns on John Cena at SummerSlam, which I would love to see, Finn Balor's all tied up now with, oh, well, I want to fight Baron Corbin or whatever. Okay, well, whatever. This is the time, if you're going to do anything with Finn Balor, do it, and do it with, you know, taking out John Cena, because that's who he should be mad at. Who would I be mad at? I'd be mad at John Cena. Baron Corbin didn't get his name on that contract. It didn't matter. It's John Cena who jumped the line. And Roman Reigns really is under no obligation to fight him. That's just dumb for the powers that be to say, well, his name's on the contract, so it counts. Okay, well, again, then why didn't Zelina Vega or Carmella put their name on the contract and beat the hell out of Sasha Banks? You see where I'm coming from here, Church? I mean, the storylines make zero sense.
They make no sense to the people that used to have to guess what the heel would do next to get back at the babyface.
Right. Well, that's the whole point. The fun of wrestling is to sit there and say, what would I do or how would I feel? And if it's totally different, I mean, if I'm Finn Balor, the first thing I say is, hey, F John Cena. The first thing I do is go to Sonya Deville and Adam Pearce and say, you honestly think that counts? I was given this title opportunity. No, he doesn't do that. So we can't root for Finn Balor. Because he's a wuss. Because anybody other than a wuss would do that, right? And I can't root for John Cena because he's a line jumper. So how the hell is either one of these guys a face that I'm supposed to look up to and root for? One's a wuss and the other's a line jumper. You don't know how to make a good face anymore. That's the problem. You don't know how to make somebody that you're going to root for. It's pathetic. And then you want to blame NXT and say, there's nobody down in NXT any good. Well, there's nobody in WWE you're treating any good. You got a wealth of talent in WWE. You can't use them. What good is some guy with no name if you can't use them? You're looking around saying, all my toys are broken. No, you broke them. You're like that little kid who looks around and says, I need a new toy. All my toys are old and broken. Well, you did it. I just can't stand it because I'm watching the collapse of a federation that I grew up totally in love with. I lived, breathed, and slept WWE from the time I was a kid till now. And I'm watching it getting torn apart piece by piece. And it's so easy to fix it, and nobody wants to admit the problem. That's the real problem. Oh, it's because we don't have anybody any good. Wrong. Oh, it's because of the COVID thing. Wrong. It's because you have no creativity and you are not engaging your audience in storylines that hook them. You know how easy it is to be hooked? You know how people channel surf sometimes and they watch like 3 minutes of a show they never saw and they're like, oh, shit, I'm going to have to watch that. Or they see an advertisement for a movie, and in a one-and-a-half-minute trailer for a movie, you're like, I'm going to that. You can't do that. You can't do that. You've lost the ability to hook your audience with any storylines, and when you do, such as with the Roman Reigns storyline, you just take it down a blind alley and say, oh, we've done enough of that. We don't need to show the Usos and Roman anymore, and no tension, no nothing. Yeah, no, you do. That's what the ratings were. That's what was happening with the ratings. Eventually, you have to move the story, but if you're a good writer for a weekly TV show and you see the audience, like a soap opera, for instance, that's on every day, and you see the audience is really engaged in this storyline of where is this story going to go, as a writer, you're tempted to say, I'm not so in such a big hurry to get to where it's going. The fans are tuning in because they're interested in this. Let's just keep stretching it out and stretching it out until we start to see the fans are getting impatient, and then we'll move it along a little bit, little by little, so they say, well, I'm just about ready to give up on, oh, no, now it's coming. Something bigger's coming. That's what a good writer does. They judge their audience and say, let's just keep it here because this is what's engaging the fans. When they start to become disengaged, we'll give them a little more. And we'll stretch that out, and then a little more, and then we'll stretch that out. And eventually we'll give them the payoff. But as long as the ratings are high, I'm in no hurry to move this story forward. I'm in no hurry to get done with this story. This is the story that's putting the bread on our table. They don't do that. Mike, they just don't, no. We're just jump to the end, and that's it.
Yeah, jump to the end, and that's it. I'll put it to you this way. When your opponent is self-destructing, you just don't do anything to help out. You just throw your hands up and watch. You let them do what they're doing. You know, again, there are things that AEW has done that, and others, but they're basically AEW, if they would just keep their mouth shut and do nothing and just plug along and whatever problems that happen with their product, correct the problems and just plug along and just let the WWE do what the WWE is doing and self-destruct, their ratings will go up and the WWE's ratings will continue to go down. You know, and that's
the old Mike, let sleeping dogs lie. Right now, the WWE is a sleeping dog. Ain't no point of kicking them because they might wake up. So, yeah, you're right. Now, another annoying thing on SmackDown was Baron Corbin steals the Money in the Bank briefcase away from Big E. Immediately, the announcer asks, well, he can't cash it in, can he? And the answer is, no, of course not. What do you mean, no, of course not? John Cena put his name on a contract that wasn't his, and that's legal. Oh, John Cena's name's on that contract, so yes. He is the number one contender. Well, then Baron Corbin is the Mr. Money in the Bank because he's got the briefcase. You can't have it both ways. Who wrote that? Did the person who wrote that not clearly see that John Cena put his name on a contract that was not meant for him, and they said it's legal because his name is on it, so I guess whoever has the Money in the Bank briefcase must be legal to cash it in. That frustrated me more than anything on SmackDown Church because it's going against exactly what they just did.
I think the person who wrote it's legal because it has his name on its storyline, forgot that thing even existed.
Probably. That's the thing. Nobody cares. You ever watch like a TV show and one week like the cousin's name is Jack and then two episodes later the same guy's name is like Joe and you're like, wait a minute. Did nobody even care to remember that that's not true? That's what the WWE's become. In the same breath, as they'll tell you, John Cena has a legal right to fight for the title, they'll tell you Baron Corbin has no right to cash in that briefcase. That does not make sense. It just doesn't. Neither one of them makes sense. I'm for not doing either one. Because what's to stop people then from just stealing the Money in the Bank briefcase every time after Money in the Bank to steal it? You got four other guys in the ring. Beat that guy up and take the briefcase. It'll be like the 24/7 belt, right? They'll just run after the guy with the briefcase, and whoever has it last, it's like hot potato. Well, who has the briefcase? It can't get worse than this. It cannot get worse than this. This was not a good episode of SmackDown. Not at all. It wasn't egregiously horrible, and the wrestling was decent. But again, there's just no storyline going anywhere. I don't give a damn about this John Cena feud. Now, John Cena tried. I'll give him credit for one thing. He mentioned, I'll be 17-time champion. I'll surpass everybody. This might be my last chance at it. That was good. But maybe that should have been enough then. Maybe that's what John Cena should have said, and I'm back for one reason. I want to make history. And you're the guy I want to make it against because I don't like you. And if you want the truth, it would have been really cool, right, to have John Cena drop all the nonsense and the storming around looking like, you know, Ernest P. Worrell. Does anybody ever think that he looks like Ernest? I'm watching John Cena, and I'm like, he's morphing into Ernest. Goes to camp right in front of my eyes. But anyway, just have him say, you know, from the minute you came in to this Federation, if the truth be told, I never liked you. And I know a lot of fans did, and I know that you bluffed a lot of people, but you never really bluffed me. I never liked you backstage. I never liked you in the ring. I just never liked you. And I was perfectly happy sitting in Hollywood saying I'm a 16-time world champion, and I'm a Hall of Famer, and I'm this, and I'm that, and the other thing. And then I saw you with this belt, and I said, uh-uh. I'm going to go one step farther. I'm going to be the 17-time world champion because I want to take it away from you because I just don't like you. And here's a newsflash. Nobody else does either. Other than your family, which you got bluffed, there ain't nobody backstage that likes you. None of these fans like you. So I'm going to do it for them, and I'm going to do it for me. At least it would have made sense. I still wouldn't have done the write your name on the contract angle. That does not make any sense. From this point forward, when they have a contract signing, there is no reason for every person in the locker room not just to hit the ring, beat up the guy who's going to sign it, and have a mad dash for who's going to sign it. Right? That is dumb. It's beyond dumb. It's intolerable. So I don't know, Mike. I mean, at this stage of the game, I'm looking at WWE crumbling, and I'm not sure they can save themselves because I don't see any creativity there.
I don't see it either. And here's something else. You said, or asked the question, can it get any worse? You know, never ask that question because you know ultimately the answer to that question is yes.
Well, I'll tell you this, Mike. If Bill Goldberg beats Bobby Lashley, the WWE is over. It's over. They can't even sell tickets as it is now. AEW is outselling them. AEW is outselling house shows to the WWE because there's nobody interesting to go see. You've even killed that. MVP was the best thing on Raw, him and Bobby Lashley, because Lashley is a good athlete, and he looks like he'd tear your head off. But he's very bad on the mic, very bad. So you put him with MVP, and MVP is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic on the mic. And then you had Cedric Alexander and Shelton Benjamin backing him up, and I'm like, this is badass. I loved the Hurt Business. I thought it was the best faction they had in ages. I was like, this is going to work, man. This is working on all cylinders. And you ruined it. You took it away for no reason. If you had said, well, I'm breaking them up for a very good reason. We got big plans for Shelton. We got big plans for Cedric. Okay, show me those plans. And I might say, all right, well, I guess that works. But when you have no plans for them, then why didn't you just leave them alone? It wasn't broke, Church. It was working perfectly, and they destroyed it.
It was working too perfectly because it was starting to remind people of the Nation of Domination.
Yeah. And that was, and what did that spawn? That spawned The Rock. Okay, so nothing wrong with that. These guys were cranking on all cylinders. One of the best things that ever happened in the recent history on Raw was when the Hurt Business as heels said, we will take money to make sure Retribution doesn't hang around here. And I'm like, well, this might get interesting because Retribution's heels and the Hurt Business are heels, but the Hurt Business are heels not to F with. And then with about 19 Retribution members, because back then they had all kinds of guys in masks, the Hurt Business comes out, starts taking off their jackets, and just badass jumps into them and starts beating them up. And I'm like, this is freaking fantastic. I think you've just turned the Hurt Business into reluctant baby faces. The fans are going to go crazy because they're really badass. They're the guys that if they come down, you're getting your asses kicked, even if there's 19 of you mother efforts. And I thought, this is it. These guys are going to be friggin' huge. Because they weren't even afraid. They're just like, okay, well, there's 20 of them and there's three of us. Sounds right. Let's go. And I'm like, this is great. You've just done the perfect thing. Because the best baby face is sort of like a little bit of a heel, like Austin was, like Shawn was, even like Taker was to a certain extent. They're badasses. They're not these guys who are going to play by the rules. They're going to bring it to you. And I'm like, dude, that's perfect. Mike, I thought that was one of the best things they did with the Hurt Business, and they ruined it.
Yeah, they ruined it. And look, it would have, I mean, we know how good a talker MVP is and has been. And at one point, he was the MVP of Raw, no pun intended. All right?
Yep, nope.
And think about this. If they'd done what they did and kept it going, not only would we know how tough Bobby Lashley is, and we know that we got two guys, we would have had two guys in Shelton and the other guy that was still in their somewhat prime and good, but it would have helped MVP because then you would have said, well, MVP is not just the talker. Yeah, on a consistent basis, he can't get in the ring anymore and do it. But if you need him in a fight.
You're right, Mike. And look, they even dropped the thing where he was after Kofi Kingston or maybe Xavier Woods. They just dropped that angle. Remember, he was talking about, oh, one of you guys, mostly Kofi, coming over to the Hurt Business, and that didn't happen. They don't know what to do. It's a disaster. The WWE is a goddamn disaster. And it's because there's not a creative bone in any of these writers' bodies. They have no idea what the fans want to see. And when they do have something, it's like they break it on purpose. Oh, you like that? We're ruining it. Nothing wrong with The Fiend? Let's ruin it. Nothing wrong with The Hurt Business? Let's ruin it. I don't understand it. But if AEW is going to be the ones that cash in on this, because the WWE is selfish. To Mike Todd in church, and we'll see you on Tuesday.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.